Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Sense right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host. And of course, Alice Del Milroy from Breaking the Mold Accounting. How are you?
I'm good, Rhea. Thanks for having me back on my show.
Well, on your show, exactly. It's your show. And I'm waiting for your guest.
I know. I was, as you know, I had a few things on last week, so we will get some more guests up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, people want to see you, not me.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to agree so
I'm
easily.
Sure I'm not sure that's the case.
Today, you know, one of the things that has been making the headlines for a little while now is this luxury tax that Canada is implementing. It's been sort of in and out of the news for probably the past 6 months. And just in this past few weeks, Canada has made it law as of September 1st. Anything over, I think it's vehicles, aircraft, and vessels. And anything over 100,000 and 200,000, depending on, there's a 20% tax. How is this going to help or harm the economy?
Well, taxes aren't new, Rhea. I think there's been quite a lot of discussion around this. I think they're quite a strong political tool that people like, politicians like to say, look, what we're doing, we're taxing these people who've got wealth for luxury items. I'm not sure it actually impacts the way that they always pan out, and that's certainly historically where they've been brought in that comes. You find that the very wealthy you can probably afford to pay the tax, often there's ways around where they can structure their affairs so they don't pay it. And actually, it's probably going to have more effect on slowing the sales at the middle end of the yacht market or aviation market, where it's going to affect small businesses and dealers who, those people choose not to buy those luxury items or look for lower cost. I think it's more of a political statement than something that's going to actually have a positive impact.
So the one thing that I have a question about is that the cost of living has risen so much in Canada. I don't think that that's a luxury amount in Canada anymore, to be absolutely honest with you. In order to rent, for example, a 2 or 3 bedroom house for a small family, you're looking at least $5,000 a month. That's just your rent. So when they throw out anything over 100,000 or anything over 200,000, I think that's unrealistic. I think maybe, if they said anything over 500,000 or anything over 600,000 is luxury. Yes, because they're not living in a day and age where $100,000 is much anymore.
No, that's the issue, isn't it, really, with the way they've structured the tax and at the level it's coming in. It's probably going to bite more on the middle class who want to buy a car, or because again, $100,000 for a luxury car, it sounds like a lot, but it's actually there's a lot of cars which are pretty middle class cars, which would be in that bracket, I imagine, in Canada, particularly if they're European imports. I don't necessarily think it's a tax on the rich. It'll probably hit more people who are in those middle classes who have got some disposable income. And look to buy a boat, a small boat or something, and it's probably going to affect those people in terms of maybe not making that. And that'll affect, in turn, that affects the sort of smaller dealerships and marine traders, etc., rather than the headline very wealthy who might be buying a £1 million yacht. The people who are buying those yachts can look at keeping it internationally, not buying it in Canada, keeping it in the Caribbean or in Europe or whatever, and structuring their affairs in a way that they don't end up paying the tax.
So is this tax literally, it's not a luxury tax. It's once again, a government trying to say, look, we're trying to make things better for you. But in fact, they're taxing the middle class once again.
Yeah, I think these wealth taxes are often a political statement. Politicians like to show that they're, look, I'm dealing with this and I'm taxing the wealthy, but in reality, it's not. And they often don't have the effect that politicians want. We've seen that worldwide over. And, again, sometimes it drives away those people who would potentially come and spend their money in the country.
Well, I mean, even talking about an airplane, I mean, come on, what kind of airplane can you buy for 200,000 Canadian? I mean, that's literally in euros, I guess that would probably be 100 and maybe 25,000 euros, less maybe. I mean, you're talking like a secondhand, maybe third hand prop plane. You know, we're not talking luxury jets here. So why attach the word luxury to that? You're just saying you're middle class and have done well enough to be able to have some fun on the weekends, but you still have to work your ass off to have that some fun on the weekends. We're just going to add the tax on top of that. We're not actually going after the billionaire who just bought himself a $500 million jet or a super yacht worth, $750 million. No, we're not actually going after those that live in that luxury tax bracket. We're going after the middle class and we're making it harder to be the type of family that they were 50 years ago, that if you worked full time, you had a good job, you could afford to have some nice things.
Yeah, I think the level that's been, the tax has been brought in, and that's where it's going to impact. It's going to impact on the people who are in this case, Canada, are working, don't have the option of saying, well, actually, I'm going to buy my boat and or my luxury goods and have it elsewhere. And that maybe, for someone who's looking at buying 100,000, talk about yachts, 100,000 doesn't buy you a very, big
yacht. We're talking a fishing boat.
Yeah, I was going to say 50,000, well, half a million probably for a 50-foot sailing boat or new. You're probably going to look at those decisions and go, well, actually, I won't. And that's going to impact the, those smaller businesses who are dealing with that, your local marine traders, et cetera, much more than it is you're very wealthy who can, let's face it, the very wealthy can probably are spending time in more than one jurisdiction anyway or country. So it's very easy for them to move or spend more time in another, whether it's Bermuda or another country, or even, move between four or five different houses if they're at that level of wealth in different jurisdictions and manage their tax affairs that way.
On one hand, I think that those that are ultra wealthy could pay tax, period. I mean, a lot of them don't. So, I mean, those are the ones that actually should be paying tax. But that's never, no one country is going to be able to tax the ultra wealthy because, as you say, they can go to another country, another country, another country. They can transfer everything as quickly as the blink of an eye if they want to. The only way that you can start getting taxes from the ultra wealthy is if the entire world came together and said, yes, we're all going to say tax the ultra wealthy this. There's no tax havens here. There's no. So trying to bring in a luxury tax really anywhere in the world for the actual wealthy is impossible. All you succeed in doing is once again taxing those that are already burdened with the majority of taxes, which is the middle class.
Yeah, there's always the, I think there's always people at levels of wealth, who've got the wealth who are happy to pay some tax. What they want to see is governments using that correctly. We've seen a lot of governments now taking tax and then handing money back as benefits or family allowance. I once heard that described as someone, taking $100 from you, burning 20 and giving 80 back, because, it's not a straight through process for any government to manage taxing that money, bringing it in and giving it back. So they'd be better off not taking, if they're going to give it back, better off not taking it in the first place. I think there's probably too much chasing of political headlines and not enough really, how do we raise money? And if you want to raise money from super wealthy, you need to make it attractive for them to come and pay a tax at a level that they are comfortable contributing, because we all have to contribute to society unless we want to live behind walls and have armed guards, etc. And you structure it that way. I think you do get to a level where if you tax too much, you will drive the people who are the wealth generations out of the jurisdiction, unless you can come up with a global tax. But I think that's fairly unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that those that should be taxed, we're never going, unless, as you said, the global tax, unless there's a global tax, those that are really wealthy will never pay tax. That's it. I think there's going to come a stage where we have literally taxed the middle class out of existence. And then who's going to be paying taxes?
Yeah, we've seen that the wealth gap, the wealth in the top 1% is over the last 2 years of the pandemic has increased massively, and that's just broadened the gap between the people who have a lot of wealth and there's the, I think that it's becoming less of a middle class and more of a the wealthy and the people who don't have the wealth, and that's something that's society has really got to look at
Well, I
globally.
mean, we saw it through the pandemic. The wealthy, some of them doubled, tripled their net worth. We saw in the US, for example, I think they created, 50% more millionaires. I could be wrong with the percentage there, but I mean, it was significant. And of course, so many people went broke. So it really just kind of widened that gap, and it showed how there are so many things wrong with the systems that we have today. But is that going to change? Probably not.
For small businesses and for people in business, it's really looking at this cost of living is increase that we're experiencing at the moment is global. It's going, it's we're seeing the same sort of themes in each country. And I think if you're a business person, you've got to just look ahead and look at how you're pricing, look at the sort of headwinds and try to manage your costs as best you can and look at your prices. If you need to put prices up, I think as much as governments might be saying, no, don't put your prices up for inflation, but you've got to be successful in business. And that might mean you've got to pass on some of these costs. And
But see, there comes an issue in that as well, because, looking at, for example, the energy industry, I know that in the UK, they had record profits in the first 6 months of the year. But when you take a look at the stats, the people in the UK are going to be paying almost 50% more. There are people, regular people, that are buying food now because they know that in the winter they're going to have to make a decision between heating their home or eating. Yet the CEOs of the energy companies are patting themselves on the back saying, what a great first half of the year. We're going to give you this $1 million or multi-million dollar bonus, et cetera, et cetera. Where does it stop?
there's a lot of headlines as well. I mean, they're clearly making big profits, the energy companies are, but they're also in that profit is the valuation of their reserves. They mark their reserves to whatever the market rate is. So you've also seen some of that profit, which is a headline profit on paper, which might not actually be cash coming into the business. It's saying, look, prices have gone up, therefore the value of our reserves, etc., we've had to mark up to the new market prices, and that hits the profit. Do I think, CEO pay is certainly an issue. I think when you look at the gap between CEOs and workers' pay, that's and we're talking big businesses as well. I guess my last comment was really about small, your smaller businesses, which are the backbone, certainly in the UK economy. For all these large companies, a lot of the actual productivity is small, medium businesses. And they're the ones that've got to survive. They're the ones who are the major employer, in countries like the UK. And I think that would probably be the same in Canada and other Western countries. So it's those business people who need to be looking and saying, right, how do we make sure we survive? And look, I think also get away from the doom and gloom. There's always opportunities in times when things get tougher. Sometimes that does sort out businesses that maybe do need to change, and also gives opportunities for who are able to acquire other businesses or expand. And tough times, sometimes we can't always live in good times, and sometimes we need those harder times to become more efficient. That's where we, even personally, that's where our learnings often are, in the tough times, not in the good times.
True enough, true enough. Well, Alistair, it'll be interesting to see where this tax goes and what the results are and if we're going to see sort of a repeal of that tax a year from now, because you never know, right?
I think, it could be with a change of government, or whether it has the effect. Again, governments don't tend to repeal taxes that quickly once they're in. They tend to stay. But certainly, I mean, other countries have wealth taxes. I'm not sure they always have the benefits that the politicians would say that this is going to have. And I think there's also ways of, there are ways of all with all these things of structuring your affairs to manage your tax bill. And I think, that's probably more work for accountants in the end.
Well, I mean, I think that the luxury tax is a good idea, personally. I think the government has absolutely no clue on the cost of living, to be honest with you. Luxury tax on 100,000 or 200,000 Canadian, give your head a shake. That's not luxury. That's existing.
Yeah, fishing, as you say, that's your fishing boat, isn't it? It's a
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, governments the world over, I don't think they're really stuck in with reality, to be honest with you.
I mean, I know some of the Scandinavian countries have very, very high wealth taxes on luxury assets, particularly being bought in companies. I think Norway, Denmark, sorry, has a tax which I think it equates to 104% of the asset's value if you buy a luxury asset in a company. But it just means people don't buy it in a company. They buy them in different vehicles and structured in a way that they don't pay that wealth tax. So,
Well, look, I think if Canada put that luxury tax on anything over 1 million, okay. I can see that. But anything under 1 million, come on. Sorry, Canadian government, but your money isn't quite worth as much as you thought it was. And it's just not going as far as it used to.
unfortunately, that will, where that's going to hit is the smaller marine traders who are selling fishing boats at that, and small power boats, etc. And that's probably where they're not going to see the sales. So,
Well, and what that means is that mom and dad who have 2 kids who are trying to aspire to middle class life, who have a little house in the suburbs, with a backyard and a front yard, 2 cars, they're not going to buy that boat for the weekend. They're not going to buy, the son that really wants to become a pilot. They're not going to buy that third hand prop plane to give him some lessons on the weekend. That's all. So it's a shame.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It is. It will be for sure. Anyways, Alistair, I want to say thank you again. Every conversation we have is a very interesting one. And I'm looking forward to your guests.
Yeah, we'll have some guests on the show.
Right. If you have any questions for Alistair or you're looking at needing an accountant to deal with your money and deal with taxes, Alistair is the man to reach out. We will supply all of his information below this interview when it airs. And I want to say thank you, Alistair.
Thanks, Rhea. Always good to talk.
It is. It is, even when we have different opinions. You've been watching another edition of Talking Sense right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Ria. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.